Respect.
So today is a mixed blessing. The blessing is less suffering. The sadness is deep. A Renaissance man who would have rather not been here, maybe biking or swimming on a day like today. Appreciating the nature of the sacred in nature, as opposed to words of sadness or reflection, because he was a man of action and a Renaissance man. You would have been intrigued to what you would all say and then analyze it and then help you on your merry way throughout life. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to be less, you're going to be more. Fair?
Fair.
So don't stand away. There's places there still. If you have an open seat near you, raise your hand so some of these folks can come in. So, Auntie and Scalia, who's buried today, and it took 3.5 hours, we won't be doing that. But Jewish prayer is informal, and Jewish culture, which he celebrated, is also informal. So there are just two prayers that I'll be saying, in essence, to frame what the Jewish obligation is. And I'm going to start with that to sort of set the tone. And then we'll have a group of people speaking who probably all together knew him about 180 years. Seriously. Because having... Oh, now I'm being corrected. I knew I was in the right place.
200 and something.
An auditor's report soon after.
Our latest year.
Dear God. Okay. And then there will be an opportunity toward the end for those of you who wouldn't criticize me and probably just say thank you very much, Rabbi, to speak as well. But when we get to that, I'll ask you to speak briefly in terms of adjectives and phrases as opposed to long-winded paragraphs, which we'll leave for Tony at the end. A little delay, but it's okay. So this prayer is about 2,000 plus years old, probably about 2,200 years old, and it's called the El Mele Rachamim. And it talks about God being incredibly compassionate. So if you know a little Arabic, you know the word Il Rahum and Rahim. That's the Hebrew El Rahum, the God is compassionate. And that compassion is not a male aspect of God, it's a female aspect of God. Rechem, the womb, is Rechem. Rachamim is the character of mother love. So this prayer, brief as it is, will envision each of us at the end of our lives as a sacred spark returning to this compassionate mother love. And the imagery is as of the good Lord as a mother bird. And you'll hear the phrase, and I'll lift my wing at that point, and it says, Tachat kanfei hashchina, that you and I come to rest under this protective, embracing wing of sort of God-like mother bird. Now, because it's Judaism, none of this is literal, but it's a lovely image of after a good life, a resting place. No threat, no hell, no fire. It's a very gentle rest. Thank you. השכינה, במעלות קדושים וטובים, זוהר הקיים מסבירים, את נשמת שמואל בן שמואל במלכה, שלח לעולמות, וגם ייתן
too many things happening, so he said we put it off till I finished the trial because there was a time when our high school split into two different schools. It was our senior year, and Steve lived at that point after Seth, I guess it's Seth, right?
Samuel.
Samuel had died, that Steve and Tony and Peter and Mom and Jane, we're living not far from us in the next little town or little incorporated village in Great Neck, New York, where a number of us grew up. And so Steve and I, who had known each other from the seventh grade, but really got very close in our senior year, would spend a lot of time together. And one of the things we do at night is listen to a radio station from Paterson, New Jersey, called WPAT. And there was a theme song, which if Arlo is going to come up here and help me with this, I may be able to access, that meant a lot to Steve. And we talked about it and played it and listened to it for a long time, but only Arlo will be able to bring that up.
His name is Mike.
It's okay.
Well, it's Mike. It's Michael Arlo.
Everyone called me Arlo. It's fine.
All right. We'll just get this going, and then we'll be fine. Okay. That's the magic touch. Is this on? Can you hear it? Cannot hear it? Can you hear it? Yes or no?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Whoa.
Mazel tov.
That's true.
Thank you very much.
Hasamea.
We talked about this music from the earliest days, would listen to it in our cars, would have it on the radio when we drive into New York City together, and never forgot it. As some of us in the room had nicknames for each other, for example, Mr. Tucker here, David Tucker, was known as Z, as he called me and Jeffrey Spanier, who's another friend of ours, because David's father was a tenor at the Metropolitan Opera and he tried to conserve his voice. And David and I and Jeffrey Spanier played baseball on the baseball team. And Reuben would come to the games, but he wouldn't say anything. He was a fairly short fellow, so he stood on the bench, and when he'd see David walk by, if David hadn't shaved, Reuben would go zzzz, so he became known as Z. With Stephen, for whatever reason, and it's hard to recall, Stephen and I called each other 2T, that's T-W-O and T. Now, what did T stand for? Well, I don't know whether I should be embarrassed to say it stood for mammary glands. And we called each other that for the last day I spoke to him, the Sunday before he left us. Stephen and I were very, very good friends, and it's hard quite to know how it started, because I played football and baseball, and he was a track man. And so we have a picture of him, and probably see it back at the house, of Stephen in the first row of the track team in the ninth grade, making a big muscle. And Stephen was kind of more the size of Peter than Tony, but he was a strong, wiry, fast guy who was a terrific cross-country athlete. And more so, you can sit down now, we've done it.
By the way, we shared a bima together for our bar mitzvah.
We did. If we were bar mitzvah together, Michael Harlow and I. And that's how far back this goes. So Stephen was a track guy, and he was a... You're going to be the microphone. And for years... We were friends, but we didn't have the kind of daily contact, at least as far as sports were concerned, until our senior year in high school, and they both went to the same high school and the school split. Now, Steve was a Kensington guy. I was from Lakeville. I guess David Saddle Rock. And these schools fed together, and some of these friendships, Michael, you went to Arundale?
Arundale, yes, and Great Neck North.
So that we, as a group, and Golden, I guess Saddle Rock, right?
Yeah.
It's unusual, I think, to remain as close as some of us have. Even today, I live in Hawaii, and people are all over the world. But we all knew and loved Stephen. The senior year split was difficult for us, but we still remained close. Stephen, as we know, went to Cooper Union after graduation, and then at City College and University of Maryland. And he worked for Fair Isaac, and when he settled in Marin, he was, after building homes in Grass Valley, he was the best mortgage broker. And recently, or at least at the beginning of the recession, he and about six of us, or eight of us, his names are on that flower list over there, invested in a multiple unit dwelling in Port Angeles, Washington. And I think that I don't think we've fixed the roof yet, but I heard from one of us that we had some good cash flow. We weren't businessmen, but we were trying our best to feed and clothe our multiple families. And so we had children who knew each other and played together when they were young. Jenna and my daughters, and Sarah and one of my other daughters, Ashley and Leilani, for 30 years. So these are close families with a lot of love. And Stephen, a man of integrity, a man of great intellectual accomplishment, but none of the bravado or, oh, I'm better than you, that so many people who've accomplished as much as he did, scholastically and financially and humanly, would you find. His marriage to Sharon was, and sorry to use the word was a great piece in his life. And not that there was anything wrong with Ronnie, but he was kind of a new man once he started that business. And they were a couple who, you know, my Joanne and I went to Sea Ranch together, which is up in Sonoma County. And what was there? Well, there were some nice bungalows, but it was quiet. And Stephen loved quiet. He loved music. We went to Birdland together in 1958 to see Mingus or Miles Davis or the MJQ. And he loved Bach and Beethoven. And he also loved to go further north on in Manhattan, and you could find him at Small's Paradise some miles ago. Tucker. So he was a man of many and varied interests, but what he was most for me was a man of integrity and love and kindness and support. And when you had Stephen's support, and you had his word and his advice, you were a very fortunate friend indeed. And I'm honored that I had 60 years of friendship with Stephen Oliphant. And I was closely involved when the jaw cancer developed, and off they were to Houston and MD Anderson. And I was trying to, you know, draw cancer, okay, well, what are the good restaurants in Houston, okay? So I called a friend in Houston. Turned out he owned a string of kids' restaurants, right? And I'm not sure Steve felt like eating much anyway when his jaw was replaced. But we thought that the cancer was gone and that he had overcome it. And the year that he was going in for a biopsy on his lung, or lungs, really concerned me. And, you know, we know that things didn't go so well. But it was his time. He would have been 75, what, last week?
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of us kind of look at our lives, at least I do, and say, well, I may have to get to August to make it to 75. Am I going to really do that? After all the abuse I've visitor myself. Steve took terrific care of himself. He was a runner, he was a swimmer. You know, he'd take a few jokes once in a while. Not much of a drinker. He'd have a beer. But he was in great shape. Which tells me that, you know, somewhere up there, the book is written, and you're going to live as long as you're going to live, and you better make the best of it. And Stephen, to me, is a man who did make the best of it and left beautiful children, a wonderful wife, and an awful lot of friends who loved him and still do very, very much. Now, I thought, because I don't want to exceed the time limit that Sharon has imposed, I'd just end with a few notions from Shakespeare, who Stephen knew and sometimes quoted, about the subject, because to me it kind of captures it. The first one is from Julius Caesar. When beggars die, there are no comets seen. The heavens themselves blaze forth the death of princes. Stephen was a prince. One of those special people who, at least if I'm lucky enough to get in that direction, I'm looking forward to seeing again. The next is from Henry VIII. He gave his honors to the world again, his blessed part to heaven, and slept in peace. Well, I imagine Steve will sleep for a little while, and then he'll get up, and his inquisitive mind will lead him to find out what else is there up here, and will accomplish something even there. And then finally, and this is the one that I think is so apt for Stephen Oliphant, from Romeo and Juliet, Act 3, Scene 2. When he shall die, take him and cut him out in little stars, and he will make the face of heaven so fine that all the world will be in love with night, and pay no worship to the garish sun. And so when I look to the stars, from now on, there's one thought I will always have of our friend and father and lover and brother, a memory and a life's accomplishment to be proud of, Stephen Oliphant.
Thank you, Brooke. So we're going to take a poetic interlude. Rita Abrams will read a poem in this period.
Sharon chose two poems by Mary Oliver that she felt exemplified Stephen and his life. I'm going to read the first one. Wild Geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things.
So another one of these wonderful long-term friends is Mark Bachman.
Well, I've known Stephen for almost 51 years. In fact, I've known Stephen so long that I remember when he drove a 47 Chevrolet named Irving, ate burgers at McDonald's, and smoked Marlboro. In our careers, we walked the same path. We met in graduate school while we were studying for our PhDs. Actually, when I met him, it was in the graduate student lounge. We started a conversation, and we became instant and close friends. We worked together at Fair Isaac, and later we were in the mortgage business together for 26 years. Because I knew Stephen so well and had such a close relationship with him, I'd like to express my view of this most special, extraordinary person. He was loved by everyone who knew him. He was a people person, always upbeat, positive, energetic, lit up the room whenever he entered. He was a real fun person to be with. He liked to joke, think about frankly pranks, and then actually did something. Steve always had a lot of compassion for people. He inspired, encouraged people to do their very best. If someone needed help, either personally or at work, Stephen would sit down, roll up his sleeves, solve the problem, and spend as much time as needed. He had a real zest for life. He was always willing to try new things. I remember when he first parachuted out of an airplane. And then I so admired when he took a year off and went to see what it was like to live in Mexico. He was a true Renaissance man. He was very knowledgeable in math, art, language, history, architecture. He spoke French and Spanish fluently. Now, he was a terrific Scrabble player. Not only did he play Scrabble, he played Scrabble in French. Steve was very much loved his family. He was a devoted husband, father, grandfather, son, brother, and uncle. He spoke often about how much he enjoyed his doing traveling, hiking, cooking, working in their garden, and going to museums. He loved his Saturdays and time running with and he was so cherished to him. Personally, Stephen was one of the best friends I ever had. I could speak to Stephen about absolutely anything, and in particular, he was the only person I could speak to about mathematics. We were always there for each other, whether personal or business issues arose. I am so grateful to have had Stephen in my life for almost 50 years, and I will deeply miss him.
Another wonderful friend is Carl Mogul. Carl?
Steve and I were friends and business partners in the sense that either of us was absent from the office, taking vacation or sick or a long weekend, we covered each other. And invariably, I always received compliments from my own clients about his handling of my business while I was away. He treated his clients just as well as he treated his own clients. I always like to refer to him as Mr. Physically Fit. He was a role model for me. I'm 12 years his junior, and he was always the example of how to maintain yourself in great physical condition, actually, while aging. We generally swim a few miles every week, also do challenging runs several times a week. Occasionally we went swimming or running together. Running with him was very interesting because whenever given a choice, he would always choose the more difficult run. It would be the biggest hill with the longest route. He would run downhill at absolutely crazy speed, like a deer. It was scary when he would run downhill. Often I would see him come into the office with scratches on his face and his forehead, skinned arms from crashing into tree branches or plummeting through the ground. Apparently, though, he was saying this is a good thing because he thought that stressing his body in this way was healthy. So I always regarded this as remarkable for a guy who's in his 70s. Around the office, Stephen was a good resource for all of his office associates, always willing and generous in offering them solutions to loan issues. He was smart and resourceful. For all of us, he was a good example of the power of positive thinking. He was always an optimist, making really a breath of fresh air in the office. Here are a few of his co-workers' comments. David Rubenstein: I used to give Steve a big hug every Friday night, and we wished each other Shabbat Shalom. Every morning, he'd give me a big, hey buddy, as I strolled in. Anytime I had a difficult situation to deal with, he was a great sounding board, and I always walked away with better options than I walked in with. He was a kind and fair man, and I broke the mold with him. Liz Baer: Steve set the tone for professionalism and was one of the most optimistic and upbeat people I have ever met. He served as a teacher to me through his great example. Paul Schechtman: Stephen had a kind soul. He was a true mensch. Jean Maurice Artis: Stephen made a positive impact in my life. He would always boost up my confidence. He was the type of person who pushes one forward with constructive criticism. I truly miss our profound conversation. Brenda Cantu: I so miss Stephen's generosity of his time and spirit. Stephen was never too busy to help me with my work or lend a sympathetic ear. If I had a difficult message to communicate, I would often rehearse what I wanted to say to Stephen. He always provided insights and perspective that I had not thought of. Stephen was never afraid to try new things. He would always say, that's so cool, I'll try it. I also miss his cocktail recipes. He used to actually have a little card that he would prepare to give to the bartender and say, this is the drink I like. And you on to Brendan. I would always ask him before the end of the day on Friday, what are we drinking tonight, Stephen? He would give me the recipe for the cocktail he enjoyed. That was a fun tradition. I remember the last time I spoke with Stephen on a Friday as he was leaving work. He said, see you later, Brenda. Bye. And waved at me as he was walking down the hall. I believe I will see you again, Stephen. Bye. Fairness. Stephen was a good man. He believed in fairness. He approached problems always with fairness being his guide towards a solution. He was generous in his appreciation of others for the work that they did, the assistance that they provided, and for him. He loved his clients and his friends. And most of all, he adored his wife, Sharon, and his son.
We're fortunate to have the team that Devin Green and Paul at this point.
This is the second of the poems that Sharon chose that she felt really captured his curiosity, and it's called When Death Comes. When death comes like a hungry bear in autumn. When death comes and takes all the bright coins from his purse to buy me and snaps the purse shut. When death comes like measles pox. When death comes like an iceberg between the shoulder blades. I want to step through the door full of curiosity, wondering, and therefore, I look upon everything as a brotherhood and a sisterhood. And I look upon time as no more than an idea. And I consider eternity as another possibility. And I think of each life as a flower as common as a field daisy, and as singular. And each name, a comfortable music in the mouth, tending, as all music does, toward silence. And each body, a lion of courage, and something precious to the earth. When it's over, I want to say all my life I was a bride, married to amazement. I was the bridegroom, taking the world into my arms. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I have made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world.
Mary Oliver.
So we're fortunate to have Jenna. It's not easy to speak about one's parent. There's no guideline for that.
When a preface is missing, you'll probably hear some repeated. I think it's apparent by how many people are in this room today just how much my dad was loved. And my dad was the most amazing man, someone who I loved and admired so much, and someone who was always instantly shocked that we're here to remember in his life and his spirit without having that beautiful spirit. My dad truly lived life to the fullest, and had some interest in many wonderful moments throughout his life, whether it was riding his motorcycle throughout Europe, Friday date nights at home with Sharon, visits to YZ2T, which you know what that means, quiet moments reading his books, dinners out with Sarah when they would be so silly and use fake accents, or his and Sharon's move to San Miguel, where they embraced the culture and everything it had to offer, gigantic bugs and all, which we experienced firsthand. He wouldn't want this to be a sad affair. He'd want it to be filled with love, joy, and lots of laughs. Anytime I'm feeling down, I remind myself that he wouldn't want to see any of us upset. He would want us to still find joy. He would want us to remember him with fondness and lots of smiles and a minimal amount of tears. While I got to share such a wonderful and special relationship with him for as long as I did, I think about him every moment of every day. I think about all the things that were books and movies with him that I know are telling about his parents and his milestones. And there are so many times that I find myself lost because of what they call him. And my heart hurts and I really did. Well, he had the brilliant analytical mathematician side of him. He also had the creative, artistic, lover of nature and beauty side as well. He could crunch a math problem in minutes in his head that would take any normal person hours, and who are we kidding, a really good calculator, and then turn around the next moment until he got an amazing music. Out of the blue, he would start singing jingles from commercials from the 50s. And in the next breath, a crossword clue that had been waiting him would pop into his head. He embodied such a wonderful balance of interesting and beautiful things. He could be so goofy, but also so professional when it came to his work. He could push himself physically, whether with his master swim class, 2-hour runs, or lifting unbelievably heavy cement columns to make their pergola. Really messy. My husband and his friends. He loved to bake, made the most delicious homemade bread, and he was a true cocktail connoisseur. You couldn't walk into the house without him offering you some specialty cocktail that took 10 minutes to make. He embraced life, the good and the bad, and was always so appreciative of what he was given. I know without a doubt that my dad was completely perfect. There was never anything he felt like he missed out on, never any issues in his life that he didn't get. Right before he passed, we were talking about vacations, and he told me that as much as he liked to travel, nothing made him happier than just home was where his heart was, where Sharon was, where his family and friends were, and where he felt the most him. He never took a moment for granted, and admittedly recalled numerous times when he would say, "Aren't we lucky?" My dad was a total social butterfly and loved every moment loved, whether it was Dixie Ranch with Sharon, Boys Nights with Tom, Mark, or Michael, or always boisterous Thanksgivings at my aunt and uncle's, or house parties with the beach. One of his favorite things to say was really sweet. That short little phrase meant so much to him. My dad said it was sweet. It made him so happy. And if you were ever able to share one of those sweet moments with him, as I'm sure, we all know how lucky we were to spend that time with this man. One of the things my dad and I enjoyed doing the most together was running. I remember how thrilled he was when I picked it up, and from that moment on, we would make a point to try and go every other weekend. On our runs, we would talk about anything and everything. I almost looked at him as a therapist at times. I could unload whatever I was feeling with him, sometimes in tears, and it is very hard to run and cry. He always had the most amazing advice for me and always stressed how lucky we were in our lives with everything we do. I think that speaks so much to his personality, that he cherished life and all of its beauty, the sweet, but also the bitter. I remember one day many years ago, I was going through a difficult time in my life. We went for a run together, and he told me something that has always stuck with me and really applies to what I'm through right now. He said that a year down the road, I would be in a much better place and that I would be happy. I would look back at this time and acknowledge how hard it was, but also realize I made it through. Being able to project myself a year down the line and know I was going to go through was such a huge relief to me and really helped get me through that time. During this time where we're grieving the loss of such an amazing person, I keep those same words in my mind. I know a year from now it will be a little easier, and while I know we will never fully go, I know many of you have the pleasure of having. I wanted to share some of my ideas of him, some that many of you probably that show just what an extraordinary, kind, funny, wonderful person he was. I remember we were out to dinner for my 30th birthday, and he told me, he said, the moment I held you in my room, and there was not a moment that went by where I didn't feel that for him. Whether it be him insisting on walking on that side of the sidewalk, or running all the way down very fast to down the steep hill, and running all the way back to hold my arm and help guide me down. He was always there for me. My dad was extremely passionate about languages. He could speak French and Spanish fluently and beautifully, and pretty much knew a little bit of every other language on the planet, including Latin. I don't know why. I can recall hundreds of times we'd be out at a restaurant where my dad somehow knew where our waiter or waitress's native language was, and would begin speaking to them in it. And we would get such a kick out of seeing their faces light up or their look of total shock. It would create an instant bond between the two of them, and it was always so beautiful to me. Sharon told me about a time when my dad was recuperating from his really major jaw reconstruction surgery. One of his nurses was Hispanic, and with his feeding tube in and all, he started speaking Spanish to her. Sharon said the nurse just about fell to the floor. She couldn't believe it. Not only that he knew Spanish, but that he had just gone through such a traumatic thing and could still grapple with her. The story my Uncle Tony recently told me, which I thought was so my dad, was about the time Uncle Tony had just moved out to California. He and my dad went for a run on the trails. He said they were falling in brambles, they were rolling down hills, everything. You name it. They both came back completely scraped and scratched up, which, if anyone knows, my dad was sort of a constant in his life. And he would always say, it's just part of being a trail runner. And I actually think he kind of liked it. So they showed back up at their house, just bleeding everywhere. And my mom looked at them and said, what in the hell happened to you two? My dad's answer is, he puffed out his chest, we were running for our health. He was also known for getting totally and completely lost on his run. He would come report to me a few days after these times he got lost and say, well, I pulled a Jenna last weekend and I got really lost. Now, I have no clue why he said this, because I never got lost on my run. I just had to go with it. Since my dad passed, we have received such an enormous amount of love and support from all of them. There aren't enough words to thank you for everything you've given us this past month. One wonderful thing we have enjoyed during this time is hearing people's memories of my. Some were funny, some were very sweet, but developed and showed an impact, one that he probably didn't even realize. One that particularly stood out to me was sent from someone he'd been friends with for many, many years, and I felt it summed him up so well. She said the following: "I just wanted you to know how I felt about your dad. In the 40 years I knew him, I found him to be one of the most sincere, positive, smartest people ever, as well as being shrewd, exact, and creative. He's irreplaceable in my life. In every quiet moment I have since his passing, I think about him, and as well, selfishly, you need to talk to him, because there is no substitute. I know my dad is irreplaceable to me, to Sharon, Sara, to his siblings, and all of you in the room. I just want to finish up by saying, Daddy, I love you more than words. I'll miss you until the end of time, and I'll see you again. Your spirit lives on in all of us, and your smile, your genius, intelligence, and amazing heart will never, ever be forgotten."
There's no guidebook on how to say goodbye to a sibling either. And Steve's sister, Jane Green, say a few. You want to sit there, right? Right.
I am the sister, which is what he called me. I'm a sister. How are you? Stephen and I have had a prickly relationship, as those in my family know. However, in the last years, I'm so grateful for that. Although distance separated us, and we did not physically connect, we did in many other ways. Our family reunion in Chicago in April will have for all of us. We had a great time. We got along famously. It was divine. A defining moment. It was a defining moment for me in my relationship with my brothers. And the photos which you have seen, which you will see, which you haven't seen yet, from that life, lovely time, will testify to our happiness. We talked about doing another one in Florida with Saturday that going to be. I tried so hard to get him to use Skype. Day after day, for God's sake, Stephen, you click on it. Finally, he did, under great duress. But sadly, he didn't take advantage of using it as much as he could. I would click, he would be offline. Our talks were about books, food, theater, travels, and family. We were on the same wavelength on those subjects, although with, of course, the power that banged us and that does bind us and that did bind us. What a terrible thing to have to bind about. He was always supportive, encouraged, assuring me that my taste would come back. The most important thing for a person who loves to eat. It did, and then it faded, and then it came back, you know, but it's something we have to wait for, so isn't it? He was so incredibly upbeat, positive, encouraging, and forward. I never heard a word of sadness, why me? I've always believed in the mind-body connection, and he exemplified that. I believe that's what kept him going. And of course, Sharon, who kept the faith and kept him supported and loved. His shock is still with me. I'll miss him mightily. The conversation isn't finished.
I know you work a lot of folks and do a lot of things, and touch a lot of people, but I really related the levels that he did touch them and their kind of thoughts about him, how he was treated and how he treated them, and that kind of wonderful connection that he made with a lot of friends and us and his family as well. One of the things that I can recall about him was Mark was talking about how much sitting at a dinner was, and we were close to each other. Oh, there's a way to figure out how many times you clink glasses without repeating it. We all do it. We all know we can place and all the cross clinks and so on. And Dick up. He said, let me have a book of matches. And so I was figuring it out. And then he did the proof for it. This is the dinner. So we figured out, I now know the formula. Mathematician Jed Jerry could figure it out. But he just did it. He's real having dinner and so on. He did some figuring and he did a proof. And yeah, that's it. And just try it with 12 people or 13 people or 3 people. And it works. And I remember it. It's n squared minus n over 2. N being the number of people in the park. But that's the kind of person he was. He was spontaneous. He kind of figured out that things were not imposing for him. So I said, okay, let me see if I can do that, or I can figure out how that would work, or try to find a way to overcome a problem, or what have you. We didn't talk a great deal, actually, but I called on the phone on the way back from work. I heard a piece of music. One piece of music in particular was knocked me out, is the Adagio. By Samuel Barber. Yeah. I think one of the more movies, Platoon. And it just knocked me out. Anyway, if you hear Joan Coleman music, it's very ethereal and angelic and a very powerful piece of music by this composer. But we were talking about a lot of things, food and so on. Steve was a very dyed-in-the-wool, non-meat person for as long as I knew him. No red meat, no red meat. And he said, we were in conversation, he said, I had brisket the other night. Before that, we had a cocktail. I said, he always drank wine. So this transition, I guess, was part of his change or his bigger talent. 70, 72, can I have a piece of meat? Cocktail. Our mom and dad used to have cocktail parties. That was a popular thing in the days. And we knew what that meant. For a house in Great Manhattan, we were all the men had suits, the ladies wore dresses. Things were formal. If you went to New York, the men all had suits on, the ladies had dresses and gloves. And that's what you did when you went to the city. You got dressed up. You went out to dinner, you got dressed up. That's simply the way it was. Not just for us, but for our neighbors. So we kind of had this formal upbringing of my mom and dad. Have a glass of wine and toast my mom and dad, and now Steve. And I think of songs and lyrics that we all grew up with, maybe say Forever Young, my Bob Dylan, of course, and other songs that kind of reflect spiritual oneness with a greater thing that might be out there. And I don't think about heaven so much as a place or up there, down here, but it's really everywhere. Some of the folks who spoke today mentioned things about Bishop and so on, and how we all kind of relate to that, and how we're all part of this universal oneness that is what we have, whether it be family, friends, food, architecture, whatever the subject might have been, it was all part of what he did. And again, I knew him as single one. He was my brother. I started out being the baby brother, then I was the kid brother, then I was in the Navy, I was his younger brother, and then I just became his brother, kind of morphed in. One funny story is the first time we were all together. Jay mentioned we had this nice reunion, we went to Chicago, and we really had a good time. It was freezing, people wanted. tossing around. It's 50 degrees, 45, 50 degrees. And then it's sun. It's early May. And people walking around in shower shoes and freezing our asses off. It's fine. We got a lot of folks in the world. So a lot of walking and talking and laughing and crying. And it was really kind of a cathartic thing. But we all modeled at the architecture of Chicago. And he knew that I liked Frank Lloyd Wright as an architect. It was something that he enjoyed being surrounded by. I mentioned to him that we have some Haywood Wakefield furniture from all that stuff. So we were all kind of involved in design and architecture and not so much math and music like other folks have mentioned, which is nice. But we operated on a different kind of plan. One of the funny times we were at my sister's house having Thanksgiving. I heard Jane curse for the first time.
And not the last time.
She said, oh, I never heard my sister curse at all. And it was, that sort of broke the ice, and it was really a lot of fun. And we all got to get out of it. But we all realized that we're all family, we're all adults, and we can talk like this, if we can't do something else. I missed him, I think it out. Again, thank you so much for all your kind words and hugs and good thoughts.
So this is your opportunity to, either from your own seat or come forward, share a quick impression, an adjective, a feeling or an emotion that you have. Please do. It means a lot to the family.
Hi, I'm Ed Golden, and I know Steve since I'm 12 years old. It's a long time. Brooke made mention of our community of Great Neck. And when we moved there, it was a relatively small town. It was a suburb of New York City that had been bigger states, and they started breaking it up. And we all came. And we had four elementary schools, as I recall. Lakeville, Steve was in Kensington, Michael,
Arundale,
and I went to Saddle Rock. So the key here in this short story is Saddle Rock and Kensington was Stephen. I went to Saddle Rock. And I was in sixth grade, and I guess we were advanced for our age because I had a girlfriend. And it was Phyllis Kirsch.
And I think she was mine in seventh grade.
Mine too.
Fourth grade. Let's stop now before we...
She was my girlfriend. We went, to follow the story, Phyllis and I were at Saddle Rock School. And we knew some of the kids from the other schools, but we didn't know many of them. We knew kids from Hebrew school or this, that, or the other. But basically, we were with our own school. So I'm in Saddle Rock with my girlfriend, Phyllis, and she says to me, Eddie, I have a friend named Ellen Schwartz, Mike Schwartz's cousin. And she's having a birthday party, and she invited me, and she invited me to take a date. So would you go with me to Ellen Schwartz's party? I said, well, I don't know Ellen Schwartz, you know, where she live? She lives in the Great Neck States. She goes to Kensington. Okay, I said, any other kids from Saddle Rock going to be there? And she says, well, I don't know. I said, well, no, who's going to be there? Well, no. She said, well, Ellen told me that the two coolest guys in Kensington were going to be there, Bobby Paltrow and Steve Oliver. So this is how I came to meet Steve Oliver. He's been someone who I loved and adored ever since. We were just wonderful friends. These people said such wonderful things, etc. I agree completely. We then were friends in junior high school, we were friends in high school, and then it was very nice. I was at New York University, and Steve was at a little bit at NYU, but also at Cooper Union. And we met on the Great Neck Railroad. We used to, the Long Island Railroad. We used to take that little going into the city, but I was at Ellis. And we hooked up again. And you know, he was so enthusiastic. He loved everybody, everything. Everything was an adventure. I mean, I remember walking in Greenwich Village with him, and he said, can you believe we're in effing Greenwich Village? It was just so wonderful. And Brooke mentioned Small's Paradise. It was on 125th Street, Myers Avenue. But what it was next door to was the Apollo Theater.
Right.
And Steve was one of the guys I would go to the Apollo Theater. And we saw in those days and the 60s, all the great black entertainers of the world came. And we saw Sammy Davis and Ella Fitzgerald and Harry Belafonte. And it was just great. And to be doing those things with Steve was just out of this world. Anyway, it continued. The rabbi is skimming. It's time to say goodbye. But Sharon, he loved and adored you so. And you two had such a beautiful marriage that it was just so wonderful for Lizzie and I and company. They took us to the Sea Ranch too. You weren't the only ones.
Not for that.
His two daughters are so loved and adored by him. And I'm so grateful that they had the grandchild. Steve sent me videos to keep taking his first steps. So, you know, it's just such a wonderful crowd. And one more thing, Steve always is the guy. You know, if you finish the book and you don't have another book to read, you call Steve. And he would give you, according to your intellect and your interests, one word nearly as high as his, he would give you a choice of three and they'd all be good. And he'd also, if you were going on a trip, he would be wonderful to tell you. I'll just leave you with this, that someday we have a very sophisticated crowd here and many of you will have a chance to do this. Lizzie and I had a wonderful trip a couple of years ago to Paris, which we had never been there together. And I asked Steve, and he told me a couple of different places to see, but at the famous church, Notre Dame, thank you, Lizzie, she was there with me. He says, everyone goes to see Notre Dame, but what after you do, and there's a little park there with the most lovely flowers and a fountain and statues.
And the flying buttresses
so
are there
too. I always think about that. And when you guys, I hope you all do again or first time to go to church and look at it and think of our wonderful dear friend, Steve Oliphant, who was funny and cute and mischievous. And I'm so joyed that his friend, he was the best.
I knew him in many different ways in other years. He was my loan broker, he was my friend, and he got hundreds of my clients into houses when nobody else could. And I speak for them today to thank him for, you know, being in homes, because I have to say that I spoke to Steve 10 times a week for years. It is now my 40th tax season, and I pick up the phone 20 times a day. First of all, not to be a snob, but he's the only one that could keep up with me. He's part of it. And when I had a question or I had a client in the room running, we called each other constantly. We started out 40 years ago as the Three Musketeers. There was Steve Oliphant, there was me as the tax consultant, and his friend Monty Jordson, who can't be here today, who was attorney. And we were the Three Musketeers, and we started out together, pursued our professions and careers, and there's no one like Steve Oliphant. He was an enigma. He was out of the box. He was as smart as he was a mishugana. And I also have to say that in 40 years I have witnessed thousands of people in a marriage, and there is no marriage that I witnessed that where I came from the same beach, that were on the same page as he and Sharon. I've watched them through every kind of challenge. I've never seen two people with more dignity and humor. And I also did see that with Ronnie and him as well. And I miss him so much, I can't stand it. And I needed today, and I thought I couldn't add anything to what you all said, but he was one of the smartest, funniest, amazing person I have ever met in my life. And I miss him terribly. Thank you.
Shortly after Steve left us, I wrote a few words down, and I'd like to read those words to you now. What is a buddy? A buddy is someone who greets you with a strong hug and hi, buddy, and means it. Goes to dinner and asks about you and really listens. Goes with you to the movies that neither of our wives want to see. Shares his California legal medicinal herbs. Talks with you about car stuff, like a 63 split window Corvette or an E-Type Jag. Helps you cut down your shelves when you don't have the right saw. Says good night with another hug, and good to see you, buddy. Steve was the ultimate buddy. Steve was a buddy to all of us.
I'm Christy Jacobs, and I've known Steve since the 80s, so I'm sort of a newbie. These are words that occurred to me. Hedonist, esthete, humorist, elegance, savoir-faire, joie de vivre, intelligent fire, compassionate glow, and shining soul. Thank you, Steve.
I'd like to say something about my Uncle Steve. We had the opportunity to go to Led Zeppelin like show together. Not many people 75 years old would come to this show. And about 2 days before the concert, I called Steve. And I'm like, Steve, you want to go to this Led Zeppelin show? I was like, yes, I want to go. He ended up just, the wives didn't go, it was just me and Steve. But this, right after Led Zeppelin, come prepared for Led Zeppelin. And of course Steve comes prepared. Yes. Come to the house, we have a drink, and some medicinals. And I introduce Steve to Uber. Coolest thing for him. Now you do Uber. You don't have to drive. We end up getting down to the Led Zeppelin show. It's a fantastic show. And I appreciate the music, but Steve was just amazed. The lights, the music, everything. Intermission, we go out, I gotta use the restroom. And Steve's sitting there, and all of a sudden, I'm walking to the bathroom, and somebody says, Steve, you're rinsing a couple buddies from work. It's insane. I'm like, Steve knows people everywhere. And it's just one of those things where you wouldn't think that Steve would run into people who work with him. But it was an unbelievable feeling, and honestly, every time I listen to The Doors, Led Zeppelin, any of those groups, I always think of Steve, and that was probably one of the best nights of my life, so I appreciate that. And that's how I think Uncle Steve was.
My name is Mike Arlo, although Steve just called me Arlo. And we are children of the world's greatest generation. And I'm really proud to have Steve as a friend. I ran track with him. I've known him from the seventh grade on. And one of the most amazing things that ever happened was he started a race late. I guess he had to go to the bathroom or something. But regardless of that, he put everything into the race that he had and ended up finishing first. Beat everyone else, including myself. And at the end, he ran off to the side of the track and threw up. That's the effort that he put into everything. And I've got to tell you that I have known many people here from the seventh grade, as Eddie Golden, Brooke Hart and I were bar mitzvahed together. David Tucker went to school together. As a matter of fact, I was the head lifeguard at the Saddle Rock Village Pool and the Lake Success Pool. So we've all been together for 60 odd years. It's just amazing. So anyway, I want to say thank you to Steve. He was a wonderful friend. I couldn't have asked for anyone better.
Hi, my name is Bob Antilla. I knew Steve for 57 years. He saved my life.
A little closer.
He literally saved my life once, metaphorically more. I was a kid from Queens whose parents were... When I first met Steve in high school, he introduced me to the in crowd, of which many are here. And then he took me home to his house. And it was the first time I had ever seen art on the walls, sculpting, books, music, people that talked the way his family... That didn't happen. It happened in his all the time. His family became my family for a while. And that saved my life, changed the course. I knew Steve in high school, as so many of us did. We roomed together in college. We, as so many others have said, because of him, fell in love with music, jazz in the Village, and in the Midtown, in Harlem, in the Apollo, everywhere. Steve called me one day when he was taking a doctorate at University of Maryland, and he said, "Have you got a little extra money? I think I found a really wonderful investment." And he said, "Well, houses in Washington, D.C. are going for next to nothing." And he said, "Come on up and I'll show you one." So I came up and he showed me a row house in a community on Rock Creek Park in Washington, D.C. And we bought the house that day for $10,000. And then I would go up every weekend and renovate the house with him. We sold the house 6 months later. What he didn't tell me when he told me about the investment was it was a totally black neighborhood after the riots in Washington, D.C. That didn't bother Steve at all. And everything he knew, and made friends with everyone in the neighborhood. We sold the house to a black doctor for his nurses. Steve then went off to California, and with the money that we made on the house, bought his first house here in Potrero Hill. I went off to somewhere else, to Los Angeles, to do what I did. And, of course, he met Sharon there, fell in love, really fell in love, and that changed him. I fell in love with a girl in Montana, of all places, and that changed me. Being with Steve anytime was always the best time of your life, as you've heard from so many people. Best high school time, the best college time, the best time in business, the best friend. 4 years ago, I called him up, and he became the best man at my wedding. But he forgot. I told him he was the best man. And he came to the wedding in a t-shirt that said, "Best B&B on it." That's my wife. My wife said, "Steve, the t-shirt." He said, "What? Who cares?" She said, "You're the best man." He said, "Oh, God, Bob, didn't tell me." I mean, that was Steve. You've heard it from everyone. I had several strange things happen after Steve passed away about the same time as they were about to do the drawing on the big lottery, the $1 billion lottery. And I was really in a dark place. And I thought, at that time, I thought, I had this great idea. So I went out and bought hundreds of tickets for the lottery, thinking, I'll win the lottery and I'll ransom my friend. I didn't win the lottery, he said. If there is a universe of souls somewhere, A, they received a perfect soul recently. B, like he vouched for me in high school, family, if he vouches for me there, I think I'll get in. And he'll be easy to find when I get there. He'll be the brightest light and the smartest. A strange and bizarre thing happened. I checked my and there was an email from Steve wishing my wife and I a happy and healthy new year. And he always ended it the way we ended every one of the thousands of conversations. He said, "Love you, buddy."
pretty sick. I love you.
I'm going to be very brief because everything has been said about Stephen from high school or maybe even grade school on. But I know Stephen and his entire family since about age 5, which is about 70 years ago. In fact, as the last conversation Stephen and I had, we argued who was the oldest. And he swore he was. And I said, no, my birthday was 4 months before his. As you know, this was just very recently. But as Tony mentioned, this guy and his family were like incredible. I knew his dad just before he passed away. His mother, my mother, were friendly and would often go out together to concerts. This is a family that was wonderful, and I think that's what made Stephen Tartt what he was. Those were the early years, and when Stephen went to the South High School, which Brooke talked about, we sort of split up because I was in the North with Mike and some of the other folks, but never, ever lost contact. And yes, he always ended a conversation with, I love you, man.
Hi, my name is April, and I know Steve from Paris. I actually met him in the 70s, and we instantly became friends. The company was very small then, so it had a really nice culture. But over the years, I'll be brief, but over the years, I was lucky enough to be in this group of people from Fair Isaac to us, and we called ourselves the Joggers for Lunch Bunch, even though the biggest jogger of us all, by far, was Stephen. So a lot of us weren't even jogging that much anymore, but we would get together and go to the finest restaurants in the area, anywhere from Marin to Napa to Berkeley. And then we actually did that for about 20 years, and Christy, who got up early, was part of that group. Then we stopped doing it all the time, but we started doing it just as an anniversary. And the latest one was the Friday before Steve passed. He couldn't make it to the lunch because he wasn't feeling well, and I really wish we could have been in. Another interesting thing I enjoyed with Steve was he had a motorcycle. And me and him and another guy from Sir Isaac went on times together. Riding motorcycles with somebody that's a close friend of his. The final thing is a little story about his ex-KU. One time, I was visiting him in the city, and he said, hey, Aitman, do you want to take my ex-KU? And I couldn't believe he was offering me that. I said, well, go ahead. Well, I lived up in Kenwood, which is on Highway 12 between Santa Rosa and Sonoma. And I had this great time just driving it up there on this beautiful road called Warm Spring Road. And I was taking it for a little drive down there, and all of a sudden the car died. Oh my God, he's going to kill me. So it sputtered to a stop, and I ended up calling Steve, and he started saying, well, all you have to do, open the trunk, and over on the right side, he started explaining this elaborate way to get down to the fuel pump and pull it out and fix it. I said, I don't think I want to do that with your ex, Katie. So I love you guys.
Hi, my name is Jean. We have known Steve very long, but we love him and always will. The other night I had a few friends up and we were standing around Mr. Steven and I said, long may you run.
Good. Very good.
So you might wonder how a rabbi came into your lives at this late stage of Steve's life. There's a term in Yiddish that indicates that in Jewish life, which is about 4,000 years old, there's been this reoccurring theme of beshert. Sometimes stuff just happens.
Sure.
And if you're Christian or Muslim, you tend to attribute this directly to God and interventions and very theological understandings. But when a Jew says it was beshared, it seems as though it was just meant to be independent of the right. divine. And I live in Novato, and I live on the street, and when my wife and I are working, we open the garage. We have two dogs. And who crosses my path with my dogs growling? But Tony. And who's Tony? Well, Tony, I've known since the day I came to Marin. I was headhunted to run a Jewish day school here. You didn't know there were Jews who needed a day school here. Seriously. And who was in my son's class, David or Jesse? Jesse, my older son's class, which was my eldest, was Hannah. So we raised our kids together, Judith, Tony, Barbara Shriven at that point, and Hannah. And he just told me how this great injustice that he never ran a day in his life. Well, until. And his brother just died. And I felt the pain, and I just saw that. And then I met Sharon and all of you. So now I ask, because I've known Tony a long time, to come out and try to put a seal on this, and then we'll say the Kaddish together. I'll explain that prayer in a moment.
Since someone opened the door on the XKE Jack, I just want to say something about it. If anyone knows cause, what do they say about the electrical system? Lucas, Prince of Darkness. The cars would run and would run. So Steve was very proud when he bought the car. I drove it once or twice myself. But the stipulation that if anything went wrong, I have to pay them. Abbott Fisk. She said, well, what do you think about XKE? I said, you know, because if you know what they look like, they're beautiful cars. I said, it's being married to a beautiful girl, mm-hmm. but she's dumb and she's bad in bed.
That's true. The air conditioning doesn't work. And the air conditioning doesn't work.
No one wants to outlive their children. I got to tell you, a living a sibling isn't fun either. I was thinking what to wear, as it is a celebration of his life. I felt something was casual was in order. Besides, think about it. If Stephen was here, he'd be wearing dungarees, a long-sleeved t-shirt, and maybe a scarf. Yeah. That would be Stephen. Steve could do it all. He could sew, cook, bake, do construction, was well-versed in art and literature, spoke several languages, and by the way, was sent in the mail a master's degree he wasn't even going for as he earned his PhD. He called the school and asked me, was it a mistake? And they said no, he had earned enough credits going for his doctorate to get a master's, so he got something for nothing. Except for my sister, he's the one I've known longer than anyone else in my life. When he was at the University of Maryland, he organized a group of students and chartered planes to Munich over several summers. He would buy a BMW motorcycle there at the factory, travel all over Europe, and speaking multiple languages let him converse in each country that he went through. While in DC, he bought a Russian wolfhound named Mishkin, which coincidentally was the license plate on his XKE. It resembled a greyhound, but had long hair and was much smarter. It was a dog in the Smirnoff Vodka ads years ago. If another dog was aggressive, he would take off with its long stride, staying just ahead of the other dog, so the other dog thought it could catch him. When the other dog finally got tired, Mishkin would turn around and beat the crap out of him. Steve said he was not only rare, but very handsome. The dog had his head, Steve, too. Whenever he walked him, women would be drawn to them. If Steve thought one of them was worthy of his company, so to speak, he turned on the charm. They wouldn't have a chance. When Steve and Ronnie were living in Corte Madera, they would see a couple, Dave and Linda,
who lived right near them, and every New Year's Eve they would get together. As the New Year started, Steve and Dave would put on their running shoes, nothing else, and head towards the overpass on the 101. If anyone was out walking so as not to startle them with their unique outfits, they would yell, "Step aside, heavy equipment on the roof." They would stand over the on the overpass and wave Happy New Year and yell to everyone. Well, one year, both Dave and Linda thought the other had brought keys to the house, and neither one had, so they were locked out. Dave said a window on the second floor was always unlocked, and Steve had one of those aluminum ladders that could, you know, he could extend to double the length. Well, I like to think that they were carrying the ladder over to Dave's house, wearing nothing again but their sneakers and a smile. Just visualize what that must have been. As luck would have it, a local police car came up, and Steve, the smooth operator, said he'd handle it. With a big smile, he said, "Officer, this is not what it appears to be." The policeman said, replied something like, "I don't know what it appears to be." Well, somehow they convinced him to follow them to Dave's, and showing proof of residence, it all worked well. When Steve got cancer, he went to Texas for treatment in September 2014, where they removed a part of his jaw and replaced it with a part of his leg bone. Within a month, he was running the hills again. And he said to me, "Except for cancer, I'm very healthy." I always told people that Steve was a nice brother. Our mother once summed it up in two sentences. She said, "Tony, you tell people how you feel. Steven tells people what they want to hear." We always have Thanksgiving at our house. As Thanksgiving 2014 approached, he called and said he couldn't come, as the radiation to his jaw had numbed everything, and it would be a waste to eat all that food, as he was tasteless. I replied, "Big deal, I've been tasteless for years." Thanksgiving 2015 was the last time Steve and the family were together. I didn't know it then that it would be the last picture of all of us. Judy and I saw Sharon a little over a week before he left us, and though he had health problems, he chose not to reveal them. Steve got me to move out to California, and I was blessed to have lived within an hour of him for 30 years and only about 15 minutes away for the last seven of them. We sang a song in Cub Scouts.
We sent a few of the lines are, "Night so long since you went away, I think about you all through the day. My buddy, your buddy misses you."
He was my brother, he was my friend. Sipranola, may his memory be a blessing. Do not mourn for what was not to be, but rejoice in what was with a smile and a tear.
Thanks, Don.
Rabbi 35 years, and I used to be the head chaplain at a Jewish home and hospital, so I've done more funerals and memorial services than I've done weddings. About 2 weeks ago, I did a tribute, not dissimilar to this, where the children couldn't find a good word to say. It's still haunting me. And then the good Lord made this a shared moment for all of us. And I want to be like Stephen. And what I'm thinking before we stand is that you and I can live our lives as a tribute to this man. And then he doesn't leave. You know, you want a phone call and you can't. You want to hug him and you can't. You want his advice and you can't get it. But you can become that person to others. and live his life fully. And then look at how you can replicate this. Please rise for the contemplation. So live your lives fully, be authentic. Each of us needs to be one of a kind and embrace it. Have a love of learning and a zest for arts. Be positive, be energetic, be joyful. Be compassionate to the other. If people cross your path, be the one who lights up a room. Find fairness in what you do. Find optimism in what comes to you, good or bad. Be predictable for your friends and spontaneous in life. Remain curious. Find a way to enrich your life and your loved ones and your children and your marriages. I was just getting to the good part, Jane. Punctuate your life and fill it with a sense of what is sweet. The family, the daughters, the brothers and sisters, Sharon and I thank you for this remarkable moment. And a not a morose moment was had here in this memorial. And as for the question that some of you have scratched yourselves thinking about today, we are all stardust. You look into the sky, we're the same stuff. We will be around each other again. And believe me, if he has the ability to transmit, he's going to be transmitting to you all the days of your lives. The Kaddish doesn't have a word about death. It talks about life. Yitkadal, Yitkadash, Shemei Rabba, Yama, Dibra, Pirute, Yandit, Malpute, Ukayevon, Uyunevon, Ukayev, all Beit Israel, Ba'agalah, Ugizman, Tarif, Yemiru, Amen. Yehei, Shemei Rabba, Nagorach, Lelam, Ume Amaya, Yitbarach, Yishabach, Yishbahar, Yishramam, Yitnasei, Yitadar, Yitalev, Yitalal, Shnei Yehudisha, Rehu. Leila, Min, Kol, Birchata, Vashirata, Tush, Pekata, Benefamata, Ta'amiran, Yalma, Yiru, Amen. Yehei, Shlama, Rabba, Min, Shemaya, Bechayim, Aleinu, Yarko, Yisrael, Yiru, Amen. Hosea Shalom, Ramah, Hosea Shalom, Aleinu V'Yarko Yisrael, V'Yiru, Amen. May the power that gives a sense that the universe is one, may the power that gives us the sense that we are all one, bring that sense from there to here through your good works. Can I get an Amen?
Amen.
Did it.
You may be seated. You might want to get so you can see that.